Today is Thursday, June 26th, and this is the World Socialist Website. The political significance and implications of Mamdani's victory in New York City by Joseph Kishore. The victory of Zohran Mamdani, a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA, in the Democratic primary for mayor of New York City, is an event of profound political significance, with national and international implications. In the financial center of world capitalism, where the banks, real estate firms, and media conglomerates wield immense power, the Democratic Party establishment suffered a major defeat. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, backed by Wall Street and the corporate media, was decisively rejected by voters. A series of high-profile endorsements and huge campaign contributions not only failed to rescue his campaign, they fueled its collapse. For workers and young people, it is necessary to understand clearly what the elections do and do not demonstrate, and what political conclusions must be drawn. The election has shattered a number of myths of American politics. First, there is the myth that socialism is toxic. Mamdani openly identified as a democratic socialist. His reform proposals, related to soaring housing costs, child care, and other social problems, clearly struck a chord with workers and young people, along with layers of the middle class, in one of the most expensive cities in the world. Second, there is the claim that criticism of Israel's genocide in Gaza amounts to anti-Semitism. The billionaire-backed smear campaign, led by Cuomo, which centered on accusations of anti-Semitism against Mamdani, backfired. Mamdani received tens of thousands of votes from among New York's 1.2 million Jewish residents. Popular opposition to war, in what Mamdani explicitly called a genocide, was a major factor in his electoral victory. Third, Mamdani's win refutes the media narrative that Trump's re-election in 2024 marked a right-wing shift in the American population. Mamdani's campaign benefited from mounting popular opposition to the Trump administration, with a candidate pointing out that Cuomo was backed by the same billionaires bankrolling Trump. Just 10 days before the vote, the largest anti-government protests in American history were held against Trump's dictatorship, and Mamdani pledged to resist Trump's attacks on immigrants. Fourth, the basic questions animating the great mass of the population center not on issues of race and gender politics, relentlessly promoted by the Democratic Party and their affiliated media outlets, but class. The sentiments animating the vote for Mamdani are bringing masses of people into conflict with the entire political order. What terrifies the ruling class is not Mondani's relatively milquetoast program, advanced within the framework of the Democratic Party, but that his victory shows socialism can gain mass support in America, and in a far more radical form. The fascist Trump administration has responded predictably with hysterical denunciations. In a social media post Wednesday, Trump declared, quote, "Zohran Mamdani, a 100% communist lunatic, has just won the Democratic primary and is on his way to becoming mayor," unquote. Trump articulates in the most naked and debased form the brutality of the ruling elite and its fear of socialism. The Democratic Party establishment, which bitterly opposed the Mamdani campaign, is responding with a mixture of flattery and threats. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, and New York Governor Kathy Hochul all congratulated Mamdani on his victory Wednesday, with Schumer praising what he called Mamdani's impressive campaign. They embrace as a boa constrictor squeezes its victim. Indeed, the primary election took place the same day that House Democrats, Jeffries included, demonstrated their hostility to the developing mass opposition to Trump when they voted to kill an impeachment resolution on Trump's criminal and unconstitutional military aggression against Iran. The nervousness of the Democratic Party was most clearly expressed in the comments of former Treasury Secretary and Harvard President Larry Summers, who denounced the quote-unquote anointment of a candidate who, quote, failed to disavow a globalize the Antifada slogan and advocated Trotskyite economic policies, unquote. Summers declared that Mamdani must evolve to reassure those committed to a, quote, market economy as an American ideal, unquote. By market economy, Summers means, of course, the unchallenged dictatorship of the financial oligarchy. If Mamdani were to resist these pressures, the Democratic Party would not hesitate to sabotage his campaign and attempt to throw the general election to Eric Adams or some other compliant representative of Wall Street. Under these conditions, the most dangerous illusion would be that the Democratic Party can be transformed into a party of the working class, a view that Mamdani advanced in his speech Tuesday night, when he declared that his campaign was the, quote, model for the Democratic Party as a party where we fight for working people with no apologies. In its lead article on Mamdani's win, Jacobin Magazine, affiliated with the DSA, declared, quote, the race has the potential to reshape national politics, upsetting the balance of forces within the Democratic Party and pointing the way to a new era of possibilities for the left, unquote. The DSA seeks, above all, to maintain the political grip of the Democratic Party and thereby strangle opposition. In fact, figures like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a member of the DSA, and Bernie Sanders, both of whom endorsed Mamdani relatively late, as he had already begun to rise in the polls, have played a critical role in facilitating the violent shift of American politics to the right. In 2016 and 2020, Sanders directed his political revolution behind Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, and in 2024, he threw his support behind Kamala Harris. Both Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez served as chief defenders of Biden up to the very end, and throughout the genocide in Gaza and the U.S.-NATO war against Russia and Ukraine. In this way, they helped pave the way for the re-election of Trump, who capitalized on the deep hostility to the Democratic Party. In his response to the Mamdani Party, Sanders is promoting the same line. He wrote in The Guardian, will the Democrats learn from Zoran Mamdani's victory? While expressing the view that the Democratic Party leadership is unlikely to change its course, Sanders proclaimed, quote, the future of the Democratic Party will not be determined by its current leadership. It will be decided by the working class of this country. As Trotsky remarked, one might as well pray for rain. The Democratic Party, no less than the Republican Party, is not an empty vessel. As with the state itself, parties represent class interests. The Democratic Party is a party of Wall Street, the military intelligence agencies, and privileged sections of the upper middle class. It is the graveyard of social movements. What must be decided by the working class is not the future of the Democratic Party, but the imperative of breaking from it and the entire framework of capitalist politics. The New York election demonstrates that there exist enormous possibilities for the development of a genuine socialist movement. Conditions are ripe, indeed overripe, for such a movement. This makes all the more essential a correct understanding of the basic political issues, which those who have given their support to Mamdani, and for that matter Mamdani himself, will have to confront. The immense social problems facing the working class, imperialist war, dictatorship, fascism, and unprecedented levels of inequality cannot be resolved within the existing political framework. It is absolutely impossible to conduct a progressive, let alone socialist policy, within the Democratic Party. Socialism is not a campaign slogan or series of reformist proposals. Even the limited social reforms advanced by Mamdani cannot be achieved without a frontal assault on the wealth and power of the capitalist ruling class. The ruling class is turning toward fascism, dictatorship, and world war. Its power over society can only be broken through the expropriation of its wealth and the transformation of the gigantic corporations upon which this wealth is based into publicly owned utilities. Workers internationally have had a wealth of experience on the results of movements that promise reform, but do not touch the foundations of capitalist society. Syriza in Greece, Corbynism in Britain, the Left Party in Germany, and many others. The outcome is inevitably a political betrayal and the strengthening of the right. The fulfillment of a socialist program requires the intervention of the working class as an independent social and political force. The New York primary is part of a broader process, a series of events giving expression to the emergence of enormous social and political opposition among workers, young people, and sections of the middle class. There is a growing mood of resistance fueled by war, repression, inequality, and the open turn toward dictatorship. But the working class has not yet entered the stage as an organized conscious force and struggle against the capitalist ruling elite on the basis of its own socialist and revolutionary program. This is the decisive question and the decisive task. NATO Summit in The Hague, A Milestone on the Way to a Third World War, by Peter Schwartz. The NATO Summit, which took place on Tuesday and Wednesday in The Hague, Netherlands, will go down in history as a milestone in the imperialist power slide toward a Third World War. The 31 members of the world's most powerful military alliance agreed on the most comprehensive rearmament of Europe since World War II. Instead of the current 2%, they want to spend 5% of GDP on war purposes within 10 years at the latest, 3.5% on purely military expenditures such as troops and weapons, and another 1.5% on expanded measures such as cybersecurity, infrastructure, and the construction of barracks. Instead of $1.5 trillion in 2024, NATO would then spend $2.8 trillion on military purposes, not taking into account growth and inflation. This is more than the entire annual economic output of Canada or Italy. The increase in military spending is justified, on one hand, by pressure from the U.S., which currently spends more on military purposes than all other NATO members combined, and has long been pushing for them to take on a larger share. On the other hand, the, quote, long-term threat posed by Russia to Euro-Atlantic security and the persistent threat of terrorism, unquote, as stated in the summit declaration, serves as another justification. Both obscure the deeper causes of the misuse of ever-increasing amounts of society's resources for the purpose of destruction and annihilation. The summit took place amid escalating wars for which NATO bears responsibility. Just a few days prior to the summit, Israel and the U.S. launched an assault on Iran in violation of international law, assassinating dozens of military leaders, politicians, and scientists, killing numerous civilians, and destroying military and nuclear facilities. But even though the Europeans were not even consulted beforehand, they celebrated the barbaric attack. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte wrote in a private text message to U.S. President Donald Trump, quote, congratulations and thank you for your decisive action in Iran. That was truly extraordinary and something no one else dared to do. It makes us all safer, unquote. Trump immediately published the message on his social media channel. The Israeli genocide in Gaza, which continues unabated, is also supported by NATO members. The European powers, especially the so-called E3, Germany, France, and Britain, are determined to continue the war against Russia at any cost, even if Ukraine is militarily and financially exhausted. A significant part of the summit preparations was aimed at keeping the U.S. on board and preventing Trump from pulling out of the war and reaching an agreement with Putin over the heads of the Europeans. In reality, it is not Russia that threatens Europe, but the other way around. NATO's steady advance into Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union provoked Russia's reactionary invasion of Ukraine. Putin had always warned that the integration of the country with its 2,000-kilometer border with Russia, into NATO was a red line that he would not tolerate being crossed. The aggressive war policy of the U.S. and the Europeans is also exacerbating conflicts within NATO itself. Trump is exposing punitive tariffs on his European partners and threatening them with the annexation of Greenland. They are not arming themselves to do him a favor, but to stand on their own 2 feet militarily and pursue their imperialist interests independently, if necessary, even against the U.S. The summit in The Hague was a crisis summit, and it may have been the last of its kind. No expense was spared to cover this up and avoid an abrupt break. Around 9,000 participants, including 45 heads of state and government and just as many foreign and defense ministers, attended a meeting that was essentially limited to a dinner with the king and, out of consideration for Trump, a 2.5-hour working session. Cost? 183 million euro. Large parts of The Hague were cordoned off. Ruta flattered the would-be dictator Trump with obsequious words that would make even a Byzantine courtier blush. Not only did he praise him for attacking Iran, he also wrote, quoting, "You are flying into another big success in The Hague this evening. It was not easy, but we've got them all signed onto 5%. Donald, you have driven us to a really, really important moment for America and Europe in the world. You will achieve something no American president in decades could get done. Europe is going to pay in a big way, as they should, and it will be your win." Unquote. The summit's final declaration was limited to 5 short paragraphs. In 2023, in Vilnius, there had been 90, and in 2024, in Washington, 44. The aim was to avoid open disagreements or Trump changing his mind again on the flight home. The declaration reaffirms, quote, "our ironclad commitment to collective defense as enshrined in Article 5 of the Washington Treaty," unquote, which Trump had called into question during his flight to the summit. However, there was no declaration of support for Ukraine from NATO, nor was there any mention of Ukraine's accession to NATO. A year ago, the Washington Declaration stated, quote, "Ukraine's future lies in NATO," unquote. The Hague Declaration now states, quote, "allies, that is, individual member states and not NATO as a whole, reaffirm their enduring sovereign commitments to provide support for Ukraine, whose security contributes to ours," unquote. The increase in military spending to 5%, which for many European countries means a tripling of their budget, places fierce social attacks and class struggles on the agenda. They will decide whether the warmongers prevail or the working class gains the upper hand. Germany, which has financial leeway thanks to a low debt ratio of 63%, is trying to leverage this somewhat through massive new borrowing. The government has presented a budget plan that aims to achieve the 5% target in just 5 years. But other countries that are already heavily indebted do not have this option. The United Kingdom and Spain, with debt ratios of 100%, Belgium with 105%, and France with 113%, have not yet presented any financing plans. They will have to cut social spending much more quickly and ruthlessly in order to achieve the NATO target. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez initially refused to agree to the 5% target, but relented after Trump berated him, and Ruta then offered him a face-saving compromise. ILA Dock Workers Union President Harold Daggett celebrates Trump's attack on Iran, by Eric Schreiber. In an extraordinary letter to President Donald Trump, Harold Daggett, president of the International Longshoremen's Association, or ILA, offered gushing praise and enthusiastic support for the criminal bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities by the U.S. military. Moreover, he pledged the ILA's backing for Trump in future acts of aggression. On June 22nd, Trump ordered the largest B-2 strike operation in U.S. history, targeting 3 sites in Iran. The main weapon was the GBU 57AB Massive Ordnance Penetrator, or MOP, a 13.6-ton bunker-busting bomb, the most powerful non-nuclear weapon of its kind ever used. B-2 Spirit stealth aircraft dropped 12 MOPs on the Fordow and 2 on its counterpart in Natanz. Numerous 2,900-pound Tomahawk missiles were also launched against both facilities in the Isfahan Research Complex. This unprovoked attack was a flagrant violation of international law and a massive escalation of the war drive against Iran, which Israel had already launched on June 13th. Israel's attacks targeted nuclear facilities and killed Iranian military leaders and scientists. These reckless acts of aggression threatened to drag the Middle East and potentially Iran's allies Russia and China into a global war. Presuming to speak on behalf of all 85,000 ILA members, Daggett praised Trump's, quote, bold and courageous decision to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, unquote. With these words, Daggett celebrated an attack on a country that had neither attacked nor threatened the U.S. Parroting the propaganda of the American ruling class, he called Iran, quote, an enemy of the United States, unquote. Daggett's support for the bombing of Iran is a doubling down on his endorsement of Trump during the ILA contract negotiations, when he claimed that Trump was the, quote-unquote, greatest friend of the American worker. The Trump camp, which had yet to take office at the time, was reportedly instrumental in brokering the deal. In reality, the contract contains no meaningful protections against automation, the main issue over which workers carried out a 3-day strike last October, which was shut down without an agreement by the ILA. After the ratification of the present deal, Daggett arrogantly lectured ILA members to work harder to prevent their jobs being automated out of existence. The ILA was one of many major unions across the U.S. to endorse Trump's right-wing America First populism, including the United Auto Workers, the Teamsters, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union on the West Coast, despite insincere statements to the contrary, the United Steelworkers, and others. The criminal character of Daggett's letter is underscored by the man himself. The U.S. Department of Justice has previously alleged that Daggett is an associate of the Genovese crime family and attributed his rise in the ILA to mob influence. In his slavish praise of Trump, Daggett, a gangster in charge of a union bureaucracy, has offered his full support to a gangster at the head of American capitalism. Since taking office, Trump has launched mass deportations of immigrant workers, deployed troops to suppress protests, and dramatically expanded his powers under the banner of national security. While the ILA has praised the war in Iran, it has kept a guilty silence on the war on the working class at home. Daggett is endorsing a long-standing aim of U.S. imperialism for regime change in Iran, which it has viewed as an obstacle to its dominance over the oil-rich Middle East, particularly since the 1979 revolution that overthrew the U.S.-backed dictatorship of Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. Washington seeks to return Iran to a semi-colonial status and tighten its grip on the region's energy supplies and trade routes, especially the Strait of Hormuz, through which one-fifth of global oil flows. This forms part of a broader strategy aimed at weakening Iran's key allies, Russia and China. Daggett also lauded Trump for, quote, defending Israel, one of our nation's most faithful and supportive allies, unquote. He made no mention of Israel's own unprovoked airstrikes on Iran, and still less of its genocide in Gaza. Since October 2023, Israel has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians with the full backing of U.S. imperialism. Under the cover of so-called humanitarian corridors, Israeli forces have deliberately targeted civilians, medical workers, and aid convoys. Daggett's silence on these crimes signifies his tacit endorsement. The brief letter is drenched in flag-waving nationalism and hero worship. Daggett wrote, quote, how proud we are as Americans to be led by you as our bold and fearless commander-in-chief. He assured Trump that, quote, all Americans know that you are protecting us, unquote. He even referred to the ILA as the I Love America Longshore Union. Daggett also glorified the U.S. military and boasted of the ILA's historic role in supplying it. Quote, ILA members have proudly joined with our armed forces for over a century in the loading and unloading of military cargo, unquote. Since the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991, the U.S. military has been used to wage illegal wars across the globe, from Iraq and Serbia to Libya and Yemen. These wars, fought in the interests of finance capital, have killed and displaced millions. Daggett solemnly swore that the ILA membership is, quote, 100% behind Trump, unquote. He wrote, quote, as the ILA's leader, I stand ready to offer you and your administration any assistance and support. This pledge means that Daggett will suppress strikes, enforce speed up, and otherwise discipline the workforce to serve the requirements of U.S. imperialism. There is a political logic at work here that goes beyond the crude thuggishness of Daggett. His support for war flows naturally from the nationalist policies which the ILA shares with the entire union bureaucracy. UAW President Sean Fain, who postures as a progressive, has tried to square the circle by claiming it is possible to support Trump's tariff policies while opposing some of his other far-right policies. But Daggett's letter demonstrates that this is a political fraud. Having accepted the logic of economic nationalism, the unions cannot avoid its consequences. If they accept America First trade policy, they must also accept war. Even where other union leaders refrain from endorsing airstrikes and bombings, they have long supported the strategic aims of U.S. imperialism. They back the drive to reassert American hegemony over its global rivals and redivide the world market in the interests of Wall Street. Their support for tariffs is part of their campaign to prove the union's usefulness in preparing for war. Fain has been the most explicit, repeatedly invoking the World War II-era arsenal of democracy to propose using idled factories to build military hardware. It is impossible to defend workers in the U.S. while killing and maiming their class brothers and sisters in Iran, China, or elsewhere. The real allies of American dock workers are not in the White House or the ILA headquarters, but among workers in Iran and around the world. The working class is the only force capable of opposing war, because its social interests are bound up with the fight for equality, not conquest. To fight war and defend their interests, workers must prepare a fight not against just Trump, but against the union bureaucracy. This means the development of rank-and-file committees, independent of union officials and the two capitalist parties, to organize a struggle which combines the fight against war and dictatorship in the U.S. with the fight to overthrow bureaucratic dictatorship within the trade unions. These committees must unify workers at every port and factory, across national lines, to wage a common struggle against imperialism and for the socialist reorganization of society. His groveling before Trump is a crude expression of the union's roles as instruments of the state and defenders of the profit system. Figures like Daggett and Fain promote nationalism, discipline the workforce, and prepare for war, all to defend their six-figure salaries and their position atop the labor apparatus. The task now is to expose the entire union bureaucracy before the working class and mobilize workers to take up the fight for socialism and internationalism. Only through the political independence of the working class and the unity of workers across borders can a movement be built to prevent a global catastrophe. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.